You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
So, we finally got up to where God was like, all right, no more messing around. We're going for it. And he sends Moses in to Pharaoh. As he's sending him, he says, pay close attention to this. I'll make you seem like God to Pharaoh, and your brother Aaron will be your prophet. So from God to Moses is going to be just like Moses to Aaron to Pharaoh. In other words, exactly what I tell you. Don't make anything up. Don't add anything like we saw last week. Tell Aaron everything I command you, and Aaron must command Pharaoh to let the people of Israel leave his country. But I'll make Pharaoh's heart stubborn so I can multiply my miracles, my miraculous signs and wonders in the land of Egypt. So right here, we have the notion of Pharaoh's heart becoming stubborn. And in Hebrew, this is the word chazak in the pa'il form. And it really shouldn't be translated stubborn, I don't think. Here's an interesting piece by Marsden and Forster. In their book, God's Strategy in Human History, a study of the pa'il form of chazak, because other forms can change the meaning in Hebrew. And they've got three modern translations of the Bible. There's AV, there's NEB, New English Bible, J.B. Phillips Bible. And they've got all of the uses of chazak in the pa'il form. Notice, right on top, they're all translated to harden, to make obstinate, or to harden or make stubborn, okay, and so on through all the uses. Those are all the uses in Exodus, where we're reading. But when you go down, beginning in Deuteronomy, and you look down further, it's hard for you guys to see this, to encourage, to lift up, to repair, upkeep, strengthen, make strong, yeah. And all these other translations are used everywhere except in Exodus. Why would that happen? It has to do with the debate over Calvinism and Arminianism, believe it or not, and the interpretation of Romans chapter 9, where Paul refers to this hardening or strengthening, it should be strengthening of Pharaoh's heart. Because it would be one thing if God was compelling Pharaoh to do evil against his will. That would mean God is actively perpetuating evil, is the author of evil. But it's a different matter if what God is doing is not compelling, he's enabling, he's allowing Pharaoh to do evil. Pharaoh wants to get the people of God, the Jewish people. He wants to waste them. He wants to own them, and if he can't do that, he'll destroy them. That's what he wants. But when you start taking on God, you have frogs all over your house. You have, you know, darkness so bad you can't see and so on, all these things happening, you reach a point where it's like, this ain't worth it anymore, you know. And Pharaoh's advisors reach that point. His priests are like, are you crazy? Can't you see the land is being wasted by this? So Pharaoh could have said, yeah, okay, I'll quit doing it. Not because he's repentant, not because he doesn't want to do it anymore, but just because it's like getting too costly, you know. What God did is he gave Pharaoh the guts to fight God, the nerve to fight God, and that's what he did. And God goes on saying to Moses, the Pharaoh's going to refuse to listen to you, so I'll bring down my fist on Egypt, and then I'll rescue my forces, my people, the Israelites. Interesting, he calls them his forces. That's because they have a mission to carry out for God. We'll learn more about that as we go on. From the land of Egypt, and with great acts of judgment, when I raise my powerful hand and bring out the Israelites, the Egyptians will know that I am Yahweh. So Moses and Aaron, this time did just as Yahweh had commanded them. They kind of learned something after the last fizzler where they come up with their own version. This time they ran strictly word for word. Moses was 80 years old and Aaron was 83 when they made their demands of Pharaoh. Battle is joined. Aaron threw down his staff when they got in there. Pharaoh's like, you know, who are you? Why should I believe you? And he showed him the thing with the stick. It became a serpent. Then Pharaoh called his own wise men, sorcerers, and these Egyptian magicians did the same thing with their magic. But they threw down their staffs, and they also became serpents, but then Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. So it became symbolic, and all of these plagues, it turns out, are very theological. It's a theological statement that's being made. In Egyptian culture, the Pharaoh was considered a god, a son of the gods, and a god in himself. And right on his forehead, this is Tutankhamun, you see a cobra. And that cobra was the symbol of ruling power, the Ure. And so to overcome that cobra symbol signifies overcoming the power of Pharaoh. And that was the message of this episode. This essay online, The Plagues and the Exodus by Dr. David Livingston. He's an archaeologist, a believer, quite good. You can get about a 10-page, more detailed wrap-up of each one of these if you want to just download that. Yeah, so Aaron's staff swallowed up their staffs. And Pharaoh's heart, however, remained just as hard. He still refused to listen, just as Yahweh had predicted. This word for hard, different word than what we said, chazak. This is a different Hebrew word. Then Yahweh said to Moses, Pharaoh's heart's stubborn, still refuses to let the people go. So Pharaoh in the morning, go to Pharaoh in the morning as he's going down to the river. Stand on the bank of the Nile and meet him there. And be sure to take along the staff that turned into a snake. So why is Pharaoh going down to the River Nile in the morning? It's because every morning they had a ceremony where he would bless the waters of the Nile and pour a flagon of water out. It would say a prayer and incantation over it. And Moses is going to meet him right there. And then announced to him, Yahweh, the God of the Hebrews, has sent me to tell you, let my people go so they can worship me in the wilderness. Until now, you've refused to listen to him. So this is what the Lord says. I will show you that I am Yahweh. Look, I'll strike the water of the Nile with this staff in my hand, and the river will turn to blood. And so, boosh, he hits the water and red coloring, blood, like spreads out. Here's another case where Pharaoh's going down with this ceremony. It is a dedication to the god Hapi, who's a twin god for Upper Nile and Lower Nile. It's the god of the Nile. And should have been able to protect the Nile from any incursions, but all it can do is turn into blood. And so the very river that had the blood of baby Jews thrown into this river, innocent victims, now is a witness to their murder. And it goes into not only the river, but urns and containers that have water from the river. The fish in it will die. The river will stink. The Egyptians are not going to be able to drink any water from the Nile. They had a fish god, too, that couldn't save the fish. Then Yahweh said to Moses, tell Aaron, take your staff, raise your hand over the waters of Egypt and rivers, canals, ponds, and all the reservoirs, and turn the water into blood. And so even the water stored in wooden bowls and stone pots, they look in there and it's blood too. Anything that came from the Nile. And so they did just as Yahweh commanded them. As Pharaoh and all of his officials watched, he raised his staff, struck the water, and suddenly the whole river turned to blood. I don't know, this blood with like hemoglobin and white blood cells and so on. Probably look like blood. The fish in the river died. The water became so foul the Egyptians couldn't drink it. There was blood everywhere throughout the land of Egypt. But again, the magicians of Egypt used their magic and they could turn water into blood. So Pharaoh's heart remained hard. He refused to listen to Moses and Aaron, just as Yahweh said. He turned to his palace and put the whole thing out of his mind. He's like, I'm not going to think about it. Then all the Egyptians would dig along the riverbank to find drinking water. So if it had seeped into their ditch they dug, it was okay. And I suppose their wells were okay too. As long as it didn't come from the Nile, it was drinkable. So they had drinking water. Let's take a minute before we go any further. This was the first plague. There's nine more yet to come. To do a little bit of thinking about plagues. Here is a naturalistic History Channel explanation for the plagues. Science proves Moses' plagues were real. The first plague, blood, is the red clay swept down into the Nile from the Egyptian highlands. The mud choked a fish in the area inhabited by the Israelites. The fish clogged the swamps where the frogs lived. And the fish soon infected with anthrax caused the frogs, the second plague, to leave the Nile for cool areas, taking refuges in people's homes. So that's why their houses are being covered in frogs. But since the frogs were already infected with anthrax, they died in new habitats. And the piles of frogs piled up, the lice, the third plague, and the flies, the fourth plague, began to multiply, feeding on all the dead frogs. So it's a sequence of events, one leading to the other. This gave rise to a pestilence that attacked animals. And the fifth plague, because the cattle were feeding on the grass, which had become infected. In man and humans, the symptom of the same disease was boils, the sixth plague. Getting boils on your skin. A second sequence of plagues, according to this explanation, is related to atmospheric and climatic conditions in Egypt. Hailstorms, although not common, do occur rarely in Upper Egypt and occasionally in Lower Egypt. The eighth plague, locusts, is a more common occurrence. They have that periodically anyway. And the ninth plague, darkness, was a Libyan dust storm. So, okay, I don't think so. First of all, if this explanation is right, that doesn't confirm that the Bible is true. It means that the Bible is false. Because the Bible said that each of these plagues was a deliberate act by Yahweh. And to try to read Genesis minus the supernatural is just a pointless project all the way around. I don't know why we would even try doing that. Why would, if the red soil is coming down into the Nile, how come their vessels were red too, that they had poured out earlier? Yeah. Now, I'll give you four reasons why these plagues happen. The theological reason. First of all, Yahweh is a God of justice, and the plagues were act of divine judgment against Egypt. Like it or not, God is a moral being. We are moral beings created in his image, and therefore we're responsible. We're responsible to the judge, and the judge of the universe is God. So, you know, we're not crazy about that idea, but there it is. There's no one else that's going to be responsible. No one else is going to judge. So what? Atrocities just go unrequited. There is no justice in the universe. Wrong. There is justice, and the justice comes from God. These people had been oppressing an entire population really bad, and they deserved judgment. They were guilty. They had been benefiting the oppression of the Hebrews we're reading about here, bloodthirsty, horrific, even throwing babies into the river. I mean, it just doesn't get any worse. Whippings, killings. Why? Money. So because this is free labor, then we'll make them do our work for us instead of doing it ourselves. It was also race slavery, with all the particularly gross aspects that we're familiar with in the antebellum South. These people deserve to be judged. And God said, I'm judging them. Most of the plagues are nuisance plagues. They didn't really kill people. They didn't have to kill people. Even in the ones that were really dangerous, the people were given the clue for how to get out of it if they wanted to, if they believed. Only the last one, the 10th plague, really had to do with death. Secondly, they're a direct attack on the gods of Egypt. The pantheon of Egypt included all these gods who the Egyptians believed were supreme, at the top of which was Pharaoh himself. And God is coming out of the myth, the shadows of history, and saying, actually, it's monotheism. I'm the only God here. All of these other gods are false. And the proof of that is that they could not protect from the plagues that God inflicted. According to the Bible, when people worship idols, those idols are literally, they're worshiping demons. Deuteronomy 32, 16 says, they made him jealous with strange gods, with abominations that provoked him to anger. They sacrificed to demons who are not God, to gods whom they have not known. The New Testament teaches the same thing in 1 Corinthians 10. God is very down on idol worship. And as you read your Old Testament, it's there from beginning to end. Idol worship is the real enemy of God, and God will not and cannot accept that. And here is partly why. Why should Pharaoh believe when he himself is a god? Why should he humble himself to Yahweh when he's saying, that would mean I don't have my own divinity anymore? Livingston says Pharaoh's authority rested on his supposed divinity. He's constantly called the good God. One of his most frequent titles designates him as the son of the sun god Ra, and we know that his claim of divine parentage was not a mere figure of speech. It was meant to be taken literally. All the plagues were meant to denigrate Pharaoh's supposed divinity and that he's incapable of maintaining order in the chaos. Well, if Pharaoh let Israel go after the first plague, then all the rest of the gods of Egypt would have retained their greatness, right? And in the eyes of the Egyptians, and unfortunately also in the eyes of Israel. You'll learn later that Israel was bringing a lot of Egyptian religious mythology with them when they escaped into the wilderness, including idols. Instead, God demonstrated the powerlessness and foolishness of polytheism and went through one god after another. It takes like the top 10 gods, discredits each and every one of them. This book, Frankfurt, Wilson, and Jacobson, Before Philosophy, The Intellectual Adventure of Ancient Man, a classic piece of scholarship on the mindset and the thinking of idol-worshiping peoples in the Middle East, in Mesopotamia, the Middle East, and also Egypt. They talk about how the apparent arbitrary willfulness of the gods and goddesses, as seen through nature, still implied an order in which the individual human mattered very little and had the same kind of role as a slave. In these religions, humans had been created to serve the gods their dinner. And when they offered animal sacrifice, it was to feed the gods, an idea completely alien from the Bible. Not for atonement at all. It had a totally different meaning. The first leap forward, these guys, none of them are Christians. These are all secular scholars from Yale. They said the first leap forward occurred with the Hebrews. They discarded the polytheistic views of the Egyptians and the Mesopotamians and shifted the you to a monotheistic, transcendent God. So as we study ancient religion, we find polytheism, animism everywhere. And then here's this one tiny spot that comes up with, no, it's monotheism. It's the Hebrews, and they're all alone. No one else holds this. That's pretty far out. Of course, now we have other religions that are also monotheistic. You have Judaism, you have Christianity, you have Islam, but all of them go back to the Bible. All of them go back to this event, in fact, where God unveiled who he was, the monotheistic, all-powerful, living God. So, in Exodus 18:11, he says, I know that Yahweh, this is Jethro, who after seeing what happened to the Egyptians, comes down and he believed in Yahweh, but he saw other gods were there too. After that, he says, now I know that Yahweh is greater than all other gods because he rescued his people from the oppression of the proud Egyptians. This was the effect it was having on the Jewish people and also on a large number of non-Jewish people as well. We're drawing the same lesson. So this is the real God. There actually is a real God. In Exodus 12, Yahweh himself says, I will execute judgment against the gods of Egypt. I am Yahweh. That's my signature. Signed, Yahweh. And so that's what's going on here. Third, he wants to convince Israel that Yahweh alone is God. He wants his people to remember this, and he's going to pound that lesson home repeatedly. They had lost faith. They had joined with the Egyptians to worship other gods. And up until now, they really had very little revelation to go on. Not a single book from the Bible, unless they may have had a copy of Job. Some people think Job might be very early, but Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, now all of those had not yet been written. Those were written after this event. So they had stories, they had traditions, handed down orally, but it was a pretty low content. And starting here and on, you'd have objective revelation from God in the Bible. They also needed to trust Moses because they were going to be following this guy. So God used this as an occasion to pound it into everybody's thick head that follow him. That's my guy. And they sort of did. Part of the time. It says in Exodus 10, I've also sent the plague so that you can tell your children and grandchildren about how I made a mockery of the Egyptians and about the signs I displayed among them. And so you will know that I am Yahweh. So this is also setting up something where everybody can say, I remember what happened. I saw it with my own eyes, and they tell their children and their children. And so God is putting a fence around the company of believers and creating a knowledge and consensus that's going to last for a long time. 2 Samuel 7, hundreds of years later, David speaking, says, what other nation on earth is like our people Israel? What other nation, O God, have you redeemed from slavery to be your own people? You made a great name for yourself when you redeemed your people from Egypt. So this is part of what was going on. Fourth, he also wanted to give the Egyptians a chance to believe and to know God. And some of them did. The average Egyptian peasant, worker, had bought into the mythology they'd been taught. It wasn't their fault. They weren't the ones necessarily. They weren't all persecuting the Jewish people in slavery. Some of them were. Some were not. But, they believed in the polytheism of their culture. Here was a statement that, the behavior, the mistreatment of the Jewish people, which was based on your theology, those who drew the right conclusions during the plagues were spared. Example comes in, for instance, in Exodus 9, Moses tells the Egyptians, quick, order your livestock and servants to come in from the fields to find shelter. Any person or animal left outside will die when the hail falls, this huge hail storm. And we read that some of Pharaoh's officials were afraid because of what the Lord had said. They quickly brought their servants and their livestock in from the fields. They got under the roof. But those who paid no attention to the word of the Lord left theirs out in the open and, of course, suffered the consequence. When they finally take off and the Egyptians let them go, we read in Exodus 12 that when leaving Egypt, a mixed multitude also went up with them, along with their flocks and herds and very large number of livestock. This mixed multitude, they're Egyptians who believed. And the word multitude here means a bunch of people. This wasn't just a handful. This is a bunch of people believed and joined in and were, of course, assimilated into the Jewish people. Let's keep reading. In 8, verse 1, Yahweh said to Moses, "Go back to Pharaoh and announce to him, 'This is what Yahweh says. Let my people go so they can serve me. If you refuse to let them go, I'm going to send a plague of frogs across your entire land.'" Heket was the frog-headed goddess of fertility. She regulated fertility, and they had fertility ceremonies that they went through with her. A body of a woman, but the head of a frog. She pretty. Now, the funny thing is, she played a part in creation, and hers was one of the oldest fertility cults in Egypt, but she couldn't control the fertility of these frogs. The frogs went crazy. The Nile River swarmed with frogs. They came up out of the river into your palace, even into your bedroom and into your bed. You're going to wake up and there's going to be frogs all in your bed. They will enter the house of your officials and your people. They will even jump into your ovens and your kneading bowls. Frogs will jump on you, your people, and all your office officials. So Aaron raised his hand over the waters of Egypt, and the frogs came up and covered the land. But the magicians were able to do the same thing with their magic. They made a frog appear. I've seen that. I've seen a bunny, a frog, a bird. That's probably sleight of hand magic. I'm sure Mike Tobin or one of you could show us how that's done. And if they had such power, what they needed to do is make the frogs go away, not create more frogs. Anyway, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron. He had enough. "Please, I plead with the Lord to take the frogs away from me and my people, and I'll let you people go so they can offer sacrifice to Yahweh." "You set the time," Moses replied, and he says, "Tell me when you want me to pray for you and your officials, and when your houses will be rid of the frogs. They'll remain only in the Nile River." "Do it tomorrow," Pharaoh said. All right. He's getting him to name the time so it won't seem like a consequence, or maybe they were already dying anyway. He's like, name the time when it's going to happen. But when the Pharaoh saw the relief come, he became stubborn. He refused to listen to Moses and Aaron, just as God predicted. So the Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron, raise your staff, strike the ground, and dust will turn into the dust that's thrown up will turn into swarms of gnats throughout the land of Egypt." Some translations translate it lice. It could be gnats or lice. They're not sure on the translation on this word. Clouds of gnats, lice, flying around. And Geb was the god of the earth. And the gnats were made from dust right up, brought up from the earth, and turned into gnats. Well, it's driving him crazy. You know, it's like freaking black fly infestation we got into one time in Canada. It was insane. And it would be like that. So there, you know, this is the finger of God, the magicians explained to Pharaoh. But Pharaoh's heart remained hard. He wouldn't listen to them, just as Yahweh predicted. Then Yahweh told Moses, "Get up early in the morning and stand on Pharaoh's way as he goes down to the river. And say to him, 'This is what Yahweh says, let my people go so they can worship me. If you refuse, then I'm going to send swarms of flies on you and your officials and your people and all the house of Egypt.' will be filled with flies, and the ground's going to be covered with flies. This time, I'll spare the region of Goshen. That's where the people of God were living. My people live there. And then you'll know that I'm Yahweh. So this is probably a smackdown on Kepteri, who is the scarab-headed god regarded as a manifestation of Atum or Ra. Was supposed to be God of the resurrection, perhaps because the dung ball, scarab beetles are like dung beetles that roll a ball of dung back to their home, and then they plant an egg in there, and then it comes to life. So it's like the dung comes to life. They worshiped it. They put scarabs on their mummies. Well, Pharaoh called out for Moses and Aaron, all right, go ahead and offer sacrifice to your God. But do it here in this land. You can do it in Egypt. Moses said that wouldn't be right. The Egyptians detest the sacrifices we offer to Yahweh our God. Look, if we offer our sacrifices here, the Egyptians can see us and they'll stone us. Wow, where did this? Here we have another. I missed that part. This looks like another case of a little innovation here from Moses. At least it's not as bad as the other one where he was saying, God will kill us. That was like really misrepresenting God. This is probably unlikely. Anyway, doesn't belong there. What he's being tempted to, Moses is being tempted to compromise here. You know, well, you can offer your offerings or whatever, but just doing it here in Egypt instead of what God said. No, they need to go out into the wilderness. And so we see this offer again for people that want to serve God or often offer some sort of a compromise. Okay, you can get into Christ, but just don't get carried away. Just keep it down, you know, and where it belongs. Don't get carried away. You know, it's like the chain that's holding you is a longer chain, but it's still a chain. And compromise is one of Satan's attacks on the servants of God. Is, well, you can do it. Just a little compromise here. That's all. Exodus 9. Yahweh said to Moses, go to Pharaoh and speak to him. Thus says, I'm not reading all the verses because there's so many of them. I'm kind of skipping along here and getting the sense of it. Let my people go. That they may serve me. If you continue to hold them and refuse to let them go, the hand of Yahweh will strike all of your livestock, your horses, donkeys, camels, cattle, sheep, and goats with a deadly plague. Interesting that the bull deity, one of the most important deities in their pantheon, Amun-Ra, chiefest of all gods, this is an ancient inscription we have, bull of Heliopolis, praise be to thee, Amun-Ra, the lord of Karnak, who presides in Thebes, bull of his mother, the first of his field, wide of stride, first in Upper Egypt, greatest of heaven, eldest of earth. Well, so, you know, I guess bulls are pretty powerful, pretty big. But under this plague, all the bulls just get sick, roll over, and die. It's interesting. I kind of agree with Walter Kaiser, who thinks all of these plagues were happening in a local area, part of Egypt around Goshen. People who actually knew about the situation with the Jewish slaves, not the rest of the country. And he argues that a couple of different ways. I think it makes sense because otherwise people in faraway cities wouldn't even know what's going on and they would be suffering for something that they didn't participate in, didn't know anything about. And the word land, when it talks about all the land, is relative. Like, you know, the word Eretz, like Eretz Yisrael is the land of Israel. It can mean the earth, it can mean the whole country, or it can mean the land relative to what we're talking about, which is the area around Goshen. Anyway, they went over and checked out the Israelites' area in Goshen. They hadn't lost a single animal. And so it was pretty obvious what was going on. Then Yahweh said to Moses and Aaron, take handfuls of soot from a brick kiln and have Moses toss it into the air while Pharaoh watches. The brick kilns, that's where they were firing the bricks that the Hebrew slaves were making with mud without having to get their own straw, remember? They were making bricks. So he goes to one of those kilns, the source of the suffering of the Hebrews, and throws it into the air. And the ashes will spread like fine dust all over the whole land of Egypt, causing festering boils to break out on people and animals throughout the land. And so they took the soot, they threw it up in the air, and boils. Ow! Boils are painful. Even the magicians were unable to stand before Moses in this one because the boils had broken out on them too. They're covered in boils. Yeah. Isis, the god of medicine and peace, they went to her for healing of disease and so forth. One of the oldest goddesses in ancient Egypt, unable to heal these boils. Everybody's sick. She can't do anything about it. They're offering up offerings, praying. Doesn't do any good. But Yahweh hardened Pharaoh's heart. And so here in 9 verse 12, for the first time, it's not Pharaoh hardening his own heart. God for hardening and should really be not hardened, but strengthened Pharaoh's heart. And just as Yahweh had predicted to Moses, Pharaoh refused to listen. Then Yahweh said to Moses, get up early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh. Tell him, this is what Yahweh, God of the Hebrews, says, let my people go so they can serve me. If you don't, I'll send more plagues on you and your officials and your people, and then you will know that there is no one like me on all the earth. By now, I could have lifted my hand and struck you and your people with a plague to wipe you off the face of the earth. It would have been, boom, that easy. I could have just eliminated all of you. But I've spared you for one purpose, to show you my power and proclaim my name throughout all the earth. But you still lord it over my people and refuse to let them go. So tomorrow at this time, I'll send a hailstorm more devastating than anything in all the history of Egypt. Quick, and this is where they tell them, get your livestock under cover or it's going to be wasted by this super hail that comes. And the believers brought their animals in under cover. But those who paid no attention to the word of Yahweh left theirs out in the open. Then Yahweh said to Moses, lift up your hand towards the sky so the hail may fall on the people and the livestock and all the plants throughout the land of Egypt. And he lifted up his staff, and Yahweh sent thunder and hail and lightning flashing toward earth. Yahweh sent a tremendous hailstorm against all the land of Egypt. Never in the history of Egypt had there been a storm like that with such devastating hail and continuous lightning. This is not a normal hailstorm. Those are usually very localized. This is like really big. It left all of Egypt in ruins. The hail struck down everything in the open field, people, animals, plants alike. Even the trees were destroyed. The only place without hail was the land of Goshen. And there the people of Israel lived. Then Pharaoh quickly summoned Moses and Aaron. Oh, this time I've sinned. He confessed, yes, Yahweh's righteous. My people were in the wrong. Please beg Yahweh to end this terrifying thunder and hail. We've had enough. I'll let you go. You don't need to stay here any longer. Well, all right, Moses said, as soon as I leave the city, I'll lift my hands and pray to Yahweh. And then the thunder and hail will stop, and you'll know that the earth belongs to Yahweh. But I know that you and your officials still don't respect Yahweh. And sure enough, here's an interesting little note in 31 and 2. All the flax and barley were ruined by the hail because the barley had formed heads and the flax was in budding. But the wheat and the inner wheat were spared because they had not yet sprouted from the ground. What a strange detail to include. That's the kind of detail you get when somebody's writing a first-hand eyewitness account, is that they're noticing things like that. If it was a novelist writing a story, and we never put in a detail like that. That's because this was written by Moses, who actually experienced this stuff. Nut was the goddess of the sky, should have been able to control what was falling to earth, but she couldn't stop the hail. So Moses left Pharaoh's court and went out of the city. When he lifted his hand to Yahweh, the thunder and hail stopped, the downpour ceased. But then Pharaoh saw that the rain, hail, thunder stopped, so he and his officials sinned again, and Pharaoh again became stubborn. Because his heart was hard, Pharaoh refused to let the people leave, just as Yahweh had predicted. Exodus 10. We're flying. Then Yahweh said to Moses, "Return to Pharaoh and make your demands again. If you refuse, watch out, for tomorrow I'll bring a swarm of locusts on your country." And of course, it happens, and the officials, including the magicians, are pleading to Pharaoh, "How long will you let this man hold us hostage? Let the men go worship Yahweh, their God. Don't you realize that Egypt lies in ruins?" So Moses and Aaron were brought back to the Pharaoh. "All right," he told them, "go and serve the Lord. But who exactly is going with you?" He's like, "We're all going. Young and old, sons, daughters, flocks, herds, must all go join together, go out to this feast." Pharaoh retorted, "Oh, Yahweh better be with you if I'm going to let you take your little ones. I can see through your evil. I know what's going on here. You're not going to come back." And he says, "Never. Only the men can go and serve Yahweh, since that's what you requested." And Pharaoh threw them out of the palace. It's an interesting question. Why didn't Pharaoh just kill Moses? All he has to do is tell the soldiers, "Stick him." He's history. Probably scared of him. I know God can put, the Bible talks about God putting the terror of the Lord upon people. And they're about to make a move, and they're kind of like, maybe I better not. Anyway, Moses rose up his staff. This time the wind brought in the locusts. And Seth, the god of the storms, should have been able to prevent this locust blowing wind and storm that came in. But he couldn't. The locusts swarmed over the whole land of Egypt, settling dense swarms from one end of the country to the other. It was the worst locust plague in Egyptian history. There's never been anything like it. Pharaoh quickly summoned Moses and Aaron. "I have sinned against Yahweh, your God, and you," he confessed. "Forgive my sin just this once and plead with Yahweh, your God, to take away this death from me." So they left and pleaded with Yahweh. Yahweh responded by shifting the wind. A strong west wind blew the locusts into the Red Sea. Not a single locust remained in all the land of Egypt. Yeah, finally, darkness was the next plague. And it was so dark, and just even in the middle of the day, that people couldn't see each other for 3 days, just darkness. That probably corresponds to the highest god in the pantheon, which was the god Ra, the sun god. And he's the principal deity of the pantheon. The Eye of Ra, some people still wear that as jewelry today. All he could do was sit in darkness. He couldn't power through all that darkness. Okay, finally the Pharaoh called Moses, "Go and serve Yahweh," he said. "But leave your flocks and herds here. Try us another compromise." "No," Moses said. "You must provide us with animals and sacrifice. All of our livestock has to go with us. Not a single hoof can be left behind." And Yahweh strengthens Pharaoh's heart once more, and he would not let them go. And so finally he said, "Get out of here." Pharaoh shouted at Moses, "I'm warning you. Never come back to see me again. The day you see my face, you will die." "Very well," Moses replied. "I'll never see your face again." And so out of Pharaoh's mouth came kind of the judgment that would be the 10th plague. So we've noticed this matching of the various plagues with different gods that are supposed to govern that area of the cosmos. It never seems to work. And the last one is Pharaoh himself. And that's going to be the plague of death, the angel of death. So to get some perspective here, as this story is progressing, it's becoming obvious, more and more obvious, that Yahweh is real. And at the same time, it's becoming increasingly clear that the gods of Egypt are not real. I hope we all know that Ra doesn't pull the sun around across the sky with his chariot, right? The sun doesn't even go across the sky. None of that's true. None of these gods are true. Pretty much nobody worships them anymore either. But there is a real God. There's a living God who's not made by man. Some of the Egyptians' hearts are changing, and they're realizing the truth. Those are going to be the mixed multitude to go up with them. This sovereign, mighty God, this God who can create out of nothing, who can devastate to any extent he wants. He's the same God who became later a human and allowed people to spit in his face, pull out his beard. And for the ladies here, that would hurt a lot, have your beard pulled out. Whipped him, punched him, and finally stripped him naked and staked him out on a gibbet to die. The same God that did that did this. And so we have the transcendence of God and his power, and yet we also see his love. In fact, this whole series that we're reading about is part of a larger story. This is basically taking a dramatic turn in the history of the people of Israel. And they're going to become, from now on, they're going to start serving God and start to create and maintain a body of material that will make the way for the coming of Jesus Christ. This is all part of the same plan. Why would Jesus let people torture him? Why would he let them put him to death? It was to save us from our own sin, to forgive us. And so, although God, you know, and a lot of people are pretty happy to hear about the loving nature of God, he's also a powerful God, and he's a judging God. Those are both true about him. And this last plague really explains to us how this sequence fits into the larger plan of God. It's a plan of rescue, rescuing the human race. And we're going to cover that next week, so I hope you're planning on coming back for that. Yes, God, we know you are a mighty God, the creator of heaven and earth. You could speak, let there be light, and every part of the universe came out of nothing. Wow, you can do whatever you want. That just makes it more remarkable that you've chosen to rescue us, that you love us. Oh, there's so much about you we need to learn, God. We pray for our study next week as you unfold the marvel of your plan of rescue. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.